What we need to do is to have governments that serve our interests. And the only way I think that we can do that is to force them to do that. And the only way that the poor have ever, or the powerless have ever been able to get governments or the powerful to serve their interests is by being disruptive.
Most major social movements are either, in our country, they're preceded by nonviolent civil disobedience or full-time organizers, like trade unions, full-time organizers, civil rights, nonviolent civil disobedience, like Martin Luther King's practice. That, in a way, is a admission of powerlessness when you have to hit the streets, and very often that's what you do. And the whole world is watching. It's a way of communication. I mean, the media tells you as students, if you produce a terrific study and have a news conference, you may not get coverage. But if you take over an academic building and block traffic illegally, you'll get on the evening news. So they're in effect inducing you to engage in that sort of positioning. But just on the consumer issue, don't define consumerism the way Madison Avenue does. Remember that almost every dollar that a corporation has ever massaged has come from consumers. And the organization of those consumer dollars along more sustainable economic purchases and the withholding from the more predatory companies is an extremely powerful tool. If we could ever develop sub-economies and sub-societies whereby more and more of our expenditures are directed in the area of sustainable economies, we are drawing the lifeblood away from these corporations. To put it in a simpler way, if you wear sweaters and keep the temperature down from 72 degrees to 63 degrees or whatever, you are weakening the oil companies and the gas companies. If you recycle paper, you're weakening the paper companies. If you do a lot of these things in aggregate, the only thing is we don't have a sufficient infrastructure and communication system to pull in consumers who are like-minded so that their purchases with other purchases really begin to register differences. You have a lot of people say, well, what's my little purchasing withdrawal going to do anyway? But if they're connected and it's measured every year, it's quite significant, such as energy consumption reduction in homes. As an example, every year you see the decline, the greater and greater efficiency. We need those kinds of indices just as the way we get unemployment and corporate profit indices. When labor started getting its own indices, that was a sign labor was getting more important. You always have to look at the yardsticks. The other point, look, there are a lot of poor people who need to consume more. You don't want to start creating barriers between environmental upper middle class people and poor people. The question is now, a lot of poor people are consuming bad things. They're consuming junk food. They are ripped off more by the marketplace. The poor pay more. Their tenements are sieves of energy waste, which they pay for through their rent. And there are things that they need to consume that they can't afford to consume. That's why the Barry Commoner approach to environmentalism is so complete, because it deals with the quality of the economy as well as the sustainable economy, and it deals with the creation of local jobs doing important things, such as maintaining solar energy systems, for instance, recycling right from the neighborhood on up. By the way, I have a few summaries of his book. His last book was called Making Peace with the Planet. In my book, he's the clearest environmental writer in our country. And there's just a two-page summary that gives you the way he approaches the environmental issue and connects it with the economy. Always connects it with, you cannot talk about environmentalism without talking about transforming the economy and transforming industries.